Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Okay, it's morning. It's your job to make it good. I will do my best to help. Bill Arnold here. Welcome. So glad you're joining us this morning. I'm just trying to get things organized here on the desk. My cell phone shut off, get my Bible open, my coffee cup in the right place. Just so you know, I'm an expert on multitasking. I can put off a bunch of things all at the same time. I can actually do that pretty well. You know, the thing I love about my smartphone, and that is that it takes care of tasks that I used to waste precious time on. Now with all my new apps, I have found new ways for me to waste precious time. Anyway, but one of the apps that I love is the Bible app. And on that, I was looking today at Acts 24, and I love verse 16. It says, "So I strive always to keep my conscience clear before God and man." I think if you're doing that, you're laying your head on the pillow at night, and you're resting peacefully because you've kept your conscience clear before God and man. That probably means that you're right in a vertical relationship with God, and you're right in horizontal relationships with others. You're doing your best to love God and love others, and you're asking for forgiveness at the end of the day. Repenting of sin, always a good thing. And then always seeking reconciliation with people in your life, people that you might be at odds with. And you know you don't want to let that go too long, because that festers. And you know what I hear about festering? I like that word, fester. Festering produces, anger, resentment, all that stuff. And it happens in over time. And the more time it goes, the worse it gets. So it's always good to nip it in the bud. I think my mom used to say that. Let's nip it in the bud. I don't even know what that meant. But I knew that we had to stop whatever it was we were doing. And we're talking about Mother's Day. And if you have a tribute you'd like to share for your mother, on behalf of your mother, why don't you send it? Write down a couple of sentences, a little tribute to mom. Send it to us at bill@myfaithradio.com. We might read it on the show on Friday. Or if you want to leave a sweet tribute to mama, you can do that too by calling 1-877-933-2484. 1-877-933-2484. And press 2. That's our voicemail. And then you just leave your little message for mom. And if it's really nice and short enough, we're going to play it on the air. And we'll leave names out. You know, we'll keep you anonymous if you like. But we just think it'd be really fun to get some really nice tributes regarding moms. Because, you know, without them, we are in trouble. So anyway, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to talk marriage this morning. And Travis is going to be on the studio line in just a minute. And he's got a great little ministry, and we're going to hear all about it. And it is called Loving the Fight. And I don't think conflict is a matter of if, it's a matter of when and how you deal with it. So we're going to chat with him about fighting fair, and he's going to talk about how marriages are working. They're working. They're good. It's all happening. All right, 7 minutes after the hour, we will be right back. All right, it's 8 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us this morning. We're going to talk about marriages this morning with Travis Rosinger. Hope I said that right. Travis, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bill. How are you?
Did I say your last name correctly?
You said it great. It was awesome.
Awesome.
Good.
So let me give you a little bit better setup. You are the pastor at The Grove in Maple Grove, and you've got this fantastic marriage ministry called Loving the Fight. So I want to hear a little bit about that. Tell me the story behind the ministry.
Absolutely. Well, Bill, the reason why my wife and I started Loving the Fight was because we would do a lot of premarital counseling and marital counseling with couples, and we were seeing success. We were seeing couples not just kind of working through difficult situations, but getting to the next point, and that is just having a thriving marriage. But my wife and I would go on runs a lot, and we talked, and just in our marriage, and we want to have a missional marriage, and we just said, how can we help more couples? And we love marriage counseling, but we just, how can we encourage more couples at one time to go from, you know, whether it's a struggling marriage or just a good marriage to a thriving marriage? And we realized that you know, to be able to do that, we needed to get to a place where we could encourage a lot of couples at one time. So we still love to, you know, spend time with couples, you know, two on two, kind of face to face. But we love getting together with couples. Whether there's 50 or 60 in a room, where marriage encourages.
Wow. So there's just a great energy in a room like that, too, because everybody gets together and sees what's going on in each other's lives. And that's probably encouraging as well, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think when everybody's there for that reason, boy, it really, it's contagious, Bill.
You know, Travis, I remember reading a book years and years ago by a guy named John Gottman, who's a Harvard guy. I think he's out of New York. And he wrote a book about conflict. And he said, it's not conflict that breaks up relationships. It's the way in which it's brought up that causes all the problems. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, very quickly marriages go from, boy, this is my best friend. We're on the same team and having the same goals. But suddenly after a few years in marriage, you know, those little things can cause conflict. And one of the things that we really like to stress is Ephesians 6:12, for a struggle is not against flesh and blood. And then, of course, it ultimately goes on to say that we are struggling, we're fighting against the powers of this dark world. And we like to remind couples that your spouse is never your enemy. They are, you know, we that's the one piece I think that is often missing is we kind of forget that, and that we need to be a team and fight against the evil that's trying to break up marriages.
Mm-hmm. Travis, might selfishness be the enemy?
I would think that, yeah, absolutely, Bill. It would be one of the biggest.
Yeah. Now, I think there's a lot of pastors out there that are saying things like, you know, marriages are under attack. We hear that all the time. And they're falling apart. And so, okay, I don't know, is that true? And if so, how can we reverse that and try to build them up?
Yeah, I would absolutely think that's true. It seems like our society now has a definite bent towards a very kind of free, loose, you just kind of make it up as you go, and marriage isn't as valued. And that certainly is a problem, because we know from science, we know from psychologists just over and over again, people are just healthier when they stay together, but spiritually they're healthier. And so, yeah, there are, of course, marriages. There is an attack on marriages, but I think a big piece of that is couples needing to get a vision of what their marriage could be, not just a good marriage, but a thriving marriage, a marriage that is impacting, influencing those people around them, other couples, other people who maybe don't know Jesus, and having that real picture of Jesus on this earth where that love is going back and forth. And they're not perfect, you know, but they're able to demonstrate that love.
Mm-hmm. Travis, you know, when I take my car in, and my mechanic, who's a great guy and a great mechanic, he always gives me the diagnostic. Bill, here's what's wrong with your car. And I always think, well, what is like one of the main one or two things that primarily rise to the surface in terms of what's wrong with marriages?
Yeah, one thing that we see a lot, Bill, is I think it really comes down to relational equity. It seems like our society has placed a really big emphasis on, you know, many couples, they're working, both of them are working jobs, mm-hmm. They have very rigorous schedules, but then there's this insane intensity put on our kids to excel and you know, to be able to do everything that everybody else is doing. And so I think so often couples are not taking the time, they're not prioritizing their time together, their affection, their intimacy. And so that's a big piece. So we like to talk about, you know, when it comes to, we brush our teeth, we keep our bodies clean, and so we practice good hygiene, but we talk about marital hygiene and really thinking about the marital heart. The human heart has four main chambers, and so we focus on the four main chambers of the marital heart, and that's relational equity, clear communication, boundaries, and financial stability.
Mm-hmm. So expectations, how does that play in the level of happiness in a marriage?
Well, I think that when it comes to marriages, we place so much on our spouse. You know, I'm going to marry you and you're going to make me happy. And so we like to remind couples that your spouse can never truly fully make you happy, that Jesus has to be the center of your own personal life and of your marriage. And so it always comes back to our own hearts. And so we have this cheesy little saying, Bill, we say, when you work on you, you work on two.
Mm. And see, that's not cheesy. That's good.
What?
That's not cheesy. That's good.
Okay. Well, I remind myself of that all the time because I don't want to underestimate the power of my influence when Jesus is working through me to bless my wife, to bless my marriage. And so having, you know, kindness and love and understanding and compassion and picking up those expectations and making sure that I'm allowing God to shoulder those in our marriage.
All right, Travis, you've got something called the Marriage Action Plan and why we need one. So when we return, we're talking about that, my friend. So you be prepared when I come back. Pressure's on.
Awesome. That sounds great. Okay, all right. Sounds good, Bill.
All right. 15 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. We're talking about marriages and conflict and figuring out ways to get an action plan to have a better marriage. I'm talking to Travis Rosinger. Thank you so much. Nice job, Bill. And we're going to ask him about what he calls MAP, the Marriage Action Plan. And we kind of briefly touched on this, Travis, but I want to go back and talk about the four areas that we need to work on.
Yeah, absolutely. The four areas that we believe are really important that we see a couple struggle in a lot, Bill, is, again, with the relational equity, clear communication, boundaries, and financial stability. Okay. Those are four areas that we think, man, a lot of couples struggle in those areas.
Okay, let's start with that first one again. What's the first one?
Relational equity.
Relational equity. Now, what does that mean?
Well, it means making a decision to that your marriage is more important than anything else in your life underneath Jesus himself.
Of course.
So that means prioritizing time together. It means making sure that there is affection on a regular basis and that there's deep intimacy. And much of that has to be intentional, where it used to come natural when you were first falling in love. We know in marriage, when there's responsibilities, children, and jobs, boy, we have to have a plan in place to make that happen.
Okay, excellent. Number two.
Yeah, clear communication, Bill.
Oh, there's a tough one.
That involves. Yeah, that's tough, and we all communicate differently. You know, we all bring our different baggage and, you know, different forms of communication or habits of communication from our families that we grew up in. So we like to teach on healthy conflict. What does that look like? What are the nuts and bolts of healthy conflict? Making sure that we're clearly communicating, that we're listening, that we're going through those times where, okay, how do we find a solution when there's that impasse where that we were not able to immediately get an answer? And then making sure that there's uninhibited information sharing, that it's going back and forth on a regular basis enough to where both couples feel very connected, not just spiritually, not just relationally, but also with their hearts in a very deep way.
Mm-hmm. Travis, do you find that men oftentimes feel inadequate when it comes to being in dialogue with their wives because women have a tendency of being so much better with words and expressing feelings and emotions, and men have a tendency of withdrawing and going into the garage?
Bill, I think you nailed it. Yeah, I think a lot of men want to share how they feel. A lot of men care deeply, of course. They love their wives, and they want to be able to connect on that level. But absolutely, it's in fact, we were with a couple recently, and that was the exact problem. And so he was wanting to share, but she certainly was getting that out, but he was struggling with that. And so, yeah, absolutely, we really like to try to encourage husbands and give them some of those tools.
Okay. And then just for review, what was number three again?
Yeah, number three, Bill, is boundaries.
Oh,
so one of the things that we've noticed is that if we don't have boundaries around our marriage to protect it, what happens is we allow those things that come in that we should be fighting against, we allow them to come into our marriage, and now suddenly there's a wall between the husband and wife, and now we're fighting against each other rather than to keep those things that shouldn't be coming in. And so, you know, we really like to stress not spending time alone with somebody of the opposite sex, not having secrets, complete honesty at all time, agreeing to not view pornography individually or together, not sharing embarrassing or compromising information, things like that. Just really building a boundary. And of course, prayer. prayer is huge. Couples need to pray together because it is a spiritual fight. I think the evil one is very concerned. He's not just trying to destroy the marriage. He's trying to destroy the potential that that marriage has to have a positive impact in it, in the world around it, and to be a great representation of Jesus on this earth.
Mm-hmm. Travis, we often try to fight worldly problems with worldly weapons, don't we?
That is absolutely true.
And so your point about being in prayer as a couple, that to me would be the critical front and center thing to keep talking about all the time.
It absolutely is, Bill. And personally, my wife and I, we learned that several years ago, that we just thought, boy, here we're pastors and we're, you know, encouraging other people. And we would pray together, but it wasn't enough. And we finally realized, wow, we need to pray together, not just once a day, but sometimes, you know, we pray three times a day. And we just constantly turn to the Lord and lift up those big critical issues.
I love it. And then what is the fourth one, the fourth area?
The fourth one is financial stability, and certainly in our society today, not only is there the pressure to just have the things that we need, and of course to be advancing careers, but then there's that pressure of always wanting to keep up with others, and so often we've found that in marriage there are those that where one spouse will spend a ton of money and the other spouse will want to kind of almost hoard the money or hang on to it with an iron grip. And so we really like to, when it comes to a marriage action plan, we really like to help couples to form what is that strategy financially where they both can come together. And my wife and I, we have shared financial goals. We know what the future is going to look like because we have taken the time and put that together.
And when it comes to finances, of course, that could be one of the trickiest areas because of natural desires to provide things for a home or a child. And if you look at the running price of things today, that can rack up a lot of bills real quick, can it?
It can, absolutely. Yeah, and the temptation is great, I think, Bill, for everybody. You know, we all want to make sure that our kids' lives are better than what we had, or make sure that they, you know, that they're enjoying themselves and there are no obstacles for their growth. And so often we, you know, people will turn to credit or they'll spend more than they should. And they're forgetting that, you know, there are some other great things that they can be doing with their finances.
Mm-hmm. Travis, if I wanted to poke around and learn more about Loving the Fight, this ministry you have, where would I go?
Well, the best way to do that, Bill, is to go to lovingthefight.com. That's the best way. You just go there. You'll be able to find out more about my wife and I, and certainly give some background information, contact information. But you can also find us on Facebook as well.
Okay.
Under Loving the Fight. Absolutely.
Yeah, and then you met your wife when you two were very young, right? Didn't you guys meet like when you were in grade school or something?
Oh my gosh, yeah, a long time ago, Bill.
Yeah.
And she was 14, I was 16, and of course she wasn't old enough to date yet. But I was like, wow, this is an amazing young person. But I patiently waited, and once she turned 2 years later, 16, I went up to her dad and asked him if I could date her, and we dated for 3 years, and then we got married, and we've been married almost 25 years.
That's awesome.
Just loving it.
That's just awesome. We've got about 30, 40 seconds left. Just as we part, Travis, what's one thing we can do to build up our marriage? Just one little tidbit today.
Yeah, absolutely. Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. You have a marital heart. Those marriages that are listening right now, you have a marital heart, and it's so important to guard it. I think with a marriage action plan too, writing down those things, where is your marriage going to be in 5 years? How are you guarding it spiritually? How are you guarding it relationally, financially, with Sabbaths and recreationally? Those kinds of things.
You know, and guarding your heart, I don't know what the Greek word is for heart in that passage, but in another passage, it means your decision-making. Love the Lord your God with your decision-making. Love your marriage with the way you make decisions. And you're doing them together in prayer. It would sound like you'd have a great marriage.
Absolutely. I really believe that your marriage partner can be, that's the greatest, one of the greatest relationships anyone could ever have on this earth. So making right decisions is great.
Travis, I've sure enjoyed our conversation. You're a great guest, and you've used my name a lot in conversation, which I find very interesting. And I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Well, sounds good. Thank you so much, Bill. God bless you. Take care.
Thanks. See you later. It's 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. Twenty-five minutes until the top of the hour. Only in God do we experience true freedom the way He created us for. When we let someone or something take place of God, we become a slave to that thing. Here's Pastor Colin Smith.
Here's an imposing person, an intimidating person, who's trying to exercise control over your life. But the answer to that is to say, no one controls me. I have one sovereign Lord. You shall have no other gods before me. Now, that's the liberty of the first commandment. And that's why we talk about the commandments as being pursuing the path of freedom.
If you want to hear that full interview and more of Colin Smith's fake accent, you can go to myfaithradio.com and go to Unlocking the Bible, and you'll find it there. Next up, we're going to talk to Kim Cotola. And as we talk about pro-life news and Mother's Day on Sunday, she couldn't be a more appropriate guest to have on right now. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 36 minutes after the hour. You know, Mama's Day. Mama's coming up on Sunday, Mama's Day. And if you are figuring out something you'd like to do for your mom, I got an idea. You should write a little tribute to your mom and email it to me, bill@myfaithradio.com. And we're going to do a little show on Friday where we're going to read some tributes if they come in, or if you want to leave a voicemail on the 1-877-933-2484. Leave a little short message. You can just leave it on the voicemail. And then if it works and it's in the right time, we'll play it. How cool would that be? Nice little tribute for mom. In the meantime, I'd like to talk to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio. And she is on the studio line coming to us. Kim, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. What a great idea to honor moms. That's really cool.
You know, it's cheaper than buying her a present. You just, you know, give her a little tribute on the air on radio. Go, Ma, listen, you know what? This cost me nothing, but here it is. I said something nice about you.
Well, you know, some moms, that's their love language, and it would be
totally
more valuable even.
Okay. Totally. You know, your mom at this stage of life, just spend time with me. Okay. Awesome. You'll get nothing.
True.
You'll get nothing this Mother's Day except me. All right. I got to tell you this story. Ryan John, this thing rocked me. Talk about that.
Oh, you know, this showed up on my news feed in Facebook, so I didn't know anything about it. And I guess I saw it very shortly after he posted it. Ryan is adopted, and he did a live video thank you to his birth mother and posted it on Facebook. He's an Australian DJ, and he's never met her, although she left him a letter. So he knows her first name, and he knows, you know, of course, obviously how old he is. He was talking about the fact that, you know, he just wanted to thank her.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very sensitive in the way that he reached out, because he said, you know, I realize you may not wish to be found, and I'm not really trying to ask anything of you. I want you to know that I thank you for giving me life. And it's just very, very touching the way that he expressed himself.
Yeah, we actually have a clip of this we're going to play, but I just got to give you a spoiler alert. Have Kleenex or a t-shirt nearby, because there could be tears.
Hey, I'm Ryan, and I've never met my biological mother. I'm adopted. So every year around Mother's Day, I get this same sort of tricky conundrum going on in my mind. So my birth mother's name is Julie, and she left me a letter. So from the little information I know, it seems that when she got pregnant unexpectedly, she didn't believe that she had the time or maturity to be a great mum. And she sort of implies that she didn't have the best upbringing, and she wanted to make sure that her child had every opportunity available. So she thought the best thing to do would be give me up for adoption. It's 2017. I'm almost 30. I'm really happy I'm here. I think when people get pregnant now and they don't want a baby, they don't have a baby. Without wanting to get into the abortion debate, I'm really happy to exist. My parents, who I now call mum and dad, they were told they couldn't be parents, and now they are, so they're really happy as well. I've heard a lot of stories where women who have given up kids for adoption feel really guilty, and sometimes it's seen as like a cowardly thing, and you see in movies the kid finding out and being upset. But as someone who was adopted, from my point of view, it's it's the total opposite. You've given someone the gift of life. You've sacrificed your body, your life for someone who in 12 months, you know, you won't even know them. So I'd love to be able to look my birth mother in the eye and just say how thankful I am for literally everything. You know, I don't want to be the skeleton in the closet. I don't want to create any awkward conversations or situations for her. She gave me my life, and I feel like the least I can do is let her live hers. I just wanted to say thank you for everything, and I hope you have a great Mother's Day.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
You go first, because I have tears in my eyes.
Oh, I know. Well, and this thing has now had like 5.5 million views.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I love about it, Bill, is that there are over 5,000 comments, and it's kind of turned into a referendum on the beauty and joy of adoption. People are sharing their stories in the comments to Ryan, encouraging him, talking about their adoptive families and or their families created through adoption. And the thing that I really want to emphasize is that he also posted in the comments section a little video chat with his adoptive mother. And oh my goodness, these are equally, if not more, moving.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's there, you know, and he says to her at one point, Billy says, I just want her to be proud of me. I would want her to be proud of me. And his mother, his adoptive mother, says, well, how could she not be proud of you? And then they share this moment and they're both weeping and
mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, it's so dear and so authentic. And he, you know, he skirts the abortion question,
mm-hmm.
but how could you miss the fact that if his mother had not chosen life for him, the world would have missed this beautiful soul, Ryan John.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we told the story on Cradle My Heart Today recently about Dante Culpepper, born in prison. A lot of people are, you know, saying, well, incarcerated women need abortion.
Mm.
We would have missed Dante Culpepper. Faith Hill is
yes.
adopted. You know, she was adopted at birth. We would have missed her incredible talents. So for people to say that, you know, abortion is just a choice, think of what the world is missing. And I don't want to hijack it for pro-life purposes, but it speaks for itself, really. It really does. And I really hope, I keep checking to see, you know, if he's found her, if she's seen the message somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that she has. But I also really like his sensitivity in respecting that she may not wish to be found. And he says that's okay, too. I just want you to know I thank you.
Yeah, it's very, very sweet. You know, I preview this stuff just so I can get through it the first time. If, in fact, I'm going to have an emotional response to it, which I did last night. But this morning, I was going to be all tough. And when I watched it, it was going to be no big deal when I listened to it. No big deal. Turns out that wasn't the case. Anyway, let's move on a little bit to what the president is trying to do, the three ways that hopefully his approach to health care will put an end to abortion.
Well, right now, as Heritage Foundation noted, we've got this on cradlemyheart.org, so you can find the links and the stories. But the Affordable Care Act had so many loopholes, Bill, that would have allowed large taxpayer subsidies to flow to health plans that cover elective abortion as well as contraception. These are issues of conscience for a lot of American taxpayers. And so the healthcare reform is really closing those loopholes. So along with defunding Planned Parenthood, the new plan calls for small business tax credits, which would allow business owners to be able to opt out of general abortion coverage. And then the third way is that the individual tax credit would require individuals to purchase additional coverage if they want abortion services. It would not be something that's just written into health care. And of course, you know, this was the hue and cry at the end of the Obama administration when it was clear that there was going to be a new way of doing business in Washington. Women were rushing out to get their IUD or to get their birth control, which was covered under Obamacare. And the IUD is problematic for pro-life proponents who say that it is an abortifacient. And so many people would object to their taxes going to pay for those methods of contraception. So this is a matter of upholding taxpayer conscience rights.
Mm-hmm.
And women will say it's, you know, it's someone trying to take their reproductive freedom. Women get very, some feminists have been very, in my opinion, very unhinged over this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And in denying that someone else's conscience is involved when they're demanding public funding, they will say, oh, they just want to legislate women's private lives. Well, they just don't want women having, you know, sex just for pleasure. Well, they just don't, you know, they want to harm women. No, this is a matter of protecting conscience rights of people who want to have a say as to where their taxes go.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kim, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I've got some, I want to ask you about Ivanka Trump had a meeting with Cecile Richards, and that was kind of an interesting conversation. We'll hear more about that when we return. In 14 minutes, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, 12 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Bill Arnold talking to Kim Cattola. She is the host of Cradle My Heart Radio on weekends, Sunday night at 8 Central Standard Time here on the Faith Radio Network. And there was an interesting conversation that Ivanka Trump had with Cecile Richards, who's the head of Planned Parenthood. And it looks like Cecile Richards kind of showed her true hand in that conversation. Would you talk about that?
Well, there was a New York Times profile on the first daughter recently, and they talked about this meeting between Ivanka and Cecile Richards, and National Review covered this. And at the time of the meeting, Don Loggins, Planned Parenthood's executive VP, told Politico that Richards would make sure that Ivanka fully understood why it would be a terrible idea for Planned Parenthood to be removed from being able to see Medicaid patients.
Medicaid patients?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that federal money doesn't actually go to abortions. Well, you know, so Medicaid through the states has been paying for abortion in California and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, it doesn't violate the Hyde Amendment because it's not federal tax dollars. But again, Bill, there are a lot of loopholes where, you know, taxpayer dollars are funding Planned Parenthood and Planned Parenthood abortion services.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ivanka proposed along the lines of something her dad had, the president had publicly also proposed, that Planned Parenthood should split in two, the smaller arm to provide abortions and a larger one devoted to women's health services.
Mm-hmm.
That way, the women's health services could receive those federal dollars
mm-hmm.
without any problem. Ms. Trump was trying to find a common sense solution in the roar of abortion politics, but officials said they thought her advice was naive, failing to understand how central reproductive choice was to the group's mission. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
That means you don't get it. We're an abortion business.
Right.
They can't come out and say that because their official line is that abortion is only 3% of their business.
Mm.
But they have shown their hand. I think National Review's analysis is spot on because they say $500 million in public funding, which is what they receive every year, never pays for abortion. And it's just one item on their menu of crucial health options provided to women. They say it's 3% of their services. But that, by the way, equals over 300,000 procedures every year, Bill. You know, they are the single largest abortion provider. And so of the estimated 1 million abortions that are happening every year, Planned Parenthood is, you know, doing a third of those. And so the fact that they would refuse to accept a common sense solution shows how important abortion is to their business model.
Mm-hmm. When I hear that 3% is abortion, I don't know if I've ever bought that.
Well, it's been debunked. Students for Life of America has a great video series, and they explain roughly that when they say it's 3% of our services, they will bundle services so that if a woman who comes in for an abortion also gets a follow-up birth control prescription, and she has, let's say, an ultrasound to diagnose age only, which is what their ultrasound does, and she has an office visit, and she has you know, maybe a pap smear or some other annual procedure, then they'll say that, you know, the abortion was one of nine services that this woman received. But what's the primary reason she went there?
Right.
To get the abortion. So it's a little bit of a sleight of hand to say that it's only 3%, and it certainly is a significant source of revenue for them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the pregnancy centers that are actually offering a pretty interesting true alternative to abortion. Yet, despite that, it's controversial.
Well, New York Magazine had a scare piece about how Mississippi's only abortion business is being threatened by a pregnancy center that moved across the street. Well, this has been a strategy that the pregnancy help movement has deployed very effectively in many, many cities across America. And so they locate nearby where an abortion business is located, and they try to intercept women who are going for abortion services and tell them, you don't have to do this. There is an alternative, and we'll help you see your pregnancy through and establish yourself as a parent or whatever it is your needs are. If you want to place a child for adoption, we can refer. And so New York Magazine thinks that that's deceptive, first of all, for them to get the location close to an abortion business. But then they just repeat the talking points that NARAL, Pro-Choice America, has been disseminating for, a decade or more, saying that pregnancy centers are fake clinics and that they're deploying scare tactics and that they, should be avoided at all costs. But it's all just allegation and smoke and mirrors. If there is anything that pregnancy centers were doing improperly, I can promise you NARAL Pro-Choice America would have, tried to bring an investigation and charges. But no such thing has ever occurred. Never has that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
2,500 pregnancy care centers around the country are helping women have their children. 9 out of 10 women who see an ultrasound in these locations will go ahead and choose life. And so it's an ideological football that New York Magazine and others, I think Vox picked up the story. And, it's probably prominent in the news because Willie Parker practices at this particular Mississippi clinic, and he's got his autobiography out now with his moral case for abortion. So they're sort of jumping on that bandwagon. But the reality is that pregnancy centers are saving lives. They are not exploiting women, and they don't make a dime from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nonprofit business model, and they offer their services to clients thanks to donations, unlike very much unlike abortion businesses, which all operate for profit.
Mm-hmm. Kim, we both saw, and I think I sent it to you, you had already seen it, of a demonstration where pregnant women had put like a stethoscope device on their belly connected to a speaker so they could just, people driving by could just, or walking by could listen to the beating hearts of their children in their womb.
That happened in Chile within the last,
Yeah,
6 or 7 months ago. And you're right. It was a very compelling demonstration, helping people understand the humanity of children before they are born.
Mm-hmm.
And the heartbeat is so compelling. And we know, I had a student at a recent Case for Life presentation. I give these presentations in Christian high schools and colleges. And the student said to me, well, in the very early stages, before a heartbeat, you can't say that that's a human life. How can something be human without a heart? Which is a very good question, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the answer is that at that stage of development, the embryo does not need a heart to fully develop or to be fully human.
Mm-hmm.
I think Oxford University shows that heartbeat starts now, I think, as early as 16 days, much earlier than had been thought before. But it takes a lot, the imagination pictures an infant, a newborn, and then we try to picture what's happening in the womb, and we're greatly assisted by this, in this by ultrasound, and now the 3D and 4D ultrasound. But without those aids and without things like amplifying the heartbeat through mm-hmm. a megaphone and a stethoscope strapped to the pregnant belly, it's very hard for us to think of unborn children as the youngest members of the human family, which is in fact what they are. The sooner that we can grasp that, the more we'll be able to do the right thing and value their lives.
And Kim, we will certainly be praying for all the women who have had abortions, who might have been mothers, who are now are not mothers, who are facing Mother's Day. It's a great prayer to have on our hearts this week.
Bill, I thank you for that because I'm in that number.
I know you are.
And I hope that everybody who is will grasp the hope of heaven. Reach out for your help at a pregnancy center with an abortion recovery Bible study, or talk to a friend in faith who can assure you that there's a reunion coming for us in Christ.
Yep. Thanks, Kim. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Yep. 3 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We'll be right back.